This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
Payback time.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. When the Federal Reserve stepped in and helped bail out Bear Stearns, we said Wall Street might have to pay a price for it. This could be it. The Securities and Exchange Commission wants investment banks to come clean with how much debt and capital they have on their books. Amy Scott reports.
In a speech yesterday, SEC Chairman Christopher Cox said the banks will report their positions in, quote, terms that the market can readily understand and digest. Investment banks have been under more pressure since the near failure of Bear Stearns 2 months ago. That's when the Federal Reserve opened its discount window to the banks. The short-term financing was previously only available to the more heavily regulated commercial banks. Management consultant Peter Cohen.
The commercial banks have access to the Fed, and they have to disclose more. And so it only seems fair to do the same thing for anybody else who borrows from that discount window.
The SEC is also requiring investment banks to have more capital on hand. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
The latest retail sales numbers are coming in this morning. No big surprise. Chains like Walmart and Costco did better than expected. People are buying the essentials. The mall stores are still struggling. Wall Street seems okay with it. The Dow is up 58 points already to 12,873. The NASDAQ has gained 12. The S&P 500 has put on 5. The markets were down a bit in Europe and Asia. You remember why liquids were banned from airplanes? Because Britain uncovered a plot to blow up jetliners using bombs disguised as soft drinks. 8 British Muslims are now on trial for that. But this week, a hole in British airport security was exposed. Airport workers from foreign countries are background checked for crimes in the UK, but not outside of the UK. Stephen Beer joins us from London. Stephen, how are people reacting to this?
Well, I mean, it's caused an absolute furore. The government says it would take too long and be too complicated to check criminal records from abroad. And it points out that all workers going into restricted zones are checked the way passengers are, with metal detectors and so on. But security analysts say this is an absurd loophole, and it does leave passengers using British airports dangerously exposed.
Do we know how many people work at British airports from other countries?
Well, there are around 200,000 workers at British airports, but the government is unable to say how many of them are foreign. It's believed there were probably several thousand.
Now that this has come to light and a lot of pressure is being put on the British government, is there any movement afoot to change this?
Not immediately. The British government says there is a transport security review underway at the moment. This was triggered by the discovery of an Al-Qaeda sympathizer working in a bookshop at Heathrow Airport last December. But that review will not report until late summer, and the government won't take any action until the report is published.
Okay, Stephen Beard, our correspondent in London, thank you.
Okay, Scott.
Listening to the Morning Report for Thursday, May 8th on Marketplace.org. Even a powerhouse like Toyota is up against it right now. Today, the carmaker announced a 28% drop in first quarter profits. Sales have slowed in the U.S., and a bigger thing, the strong yen and the weak dollar are hurting Toyota's export business. What to do? How about raise prices? More from Stacey Vanek-Smith.
Toyota will raise the price of its Yaris sedan by $200. The Camry hybrid will cost about $300 more. But 2008 auto sales are expected to hit 15-year lows. So why would Toyota charge more? because it can, says global management consultant Pam Murtaugh.
Toyota has never had to rebate, meaning pay people to buy their cars the way Detroit has. So there's a lot of elasticity for Toyota.
But Toyota isn't immune to the industry's problems, says David Cole, chairman of the Center for Automotive Research. He says commodities prices have made materials more expensive and the weak dollar has squeezed profits.
Even Toyota is really facing a crunch, partly because of the softening market here, but they have been hit very hard by the strengthening of the Japanese yen as well.
Cole says new technology and stiffer fuel efficiency requirements could also contribute to higher prices. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith for Marketplace.
Today, the House will try to finish up the emergency war spending bill. Nearly 90% of the money will pay for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan for the next year. But as Steve Henn reports, it's the other 10% that's really creating the controversy.
The bill also includes cash for unemployment insurance and more money for education benefits for veterans. That's something Paul Rykoff, who runs the Iraq-Afghanistan War Veterans Association, has been fighting for years.
This is for my soldiers who didn't get to go to college. 38 guys in my infantry platoon served for a year in Iraq. Some of them were wounded. Some of them gave up their jobs back home and really put their lives and their families on the line to serve this country, and I think they deserve to go to college.
But budget watchdogs like Bob Bixby, who runs the Concord Coalition, are worried the current bill doesn't include spending cuts or new taxes to pay for these benefits.
You really have to look at the budgetary bottom line here. This is not a small amount of money by any sense.
The new GI Bill would cost $50 billion over the next 10 years, and the White House has threatened a veto. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn. For Marketplace.
In Haiti, riots over food prices.
Limiting purchases of rice.
Hey, winter wheat's up 25 cents. Corn.
We continue now our coverage of the global food crisis. Yesterday, we looked at the causes and the consequences. Consequences could be dire in many countries. But some American farmers who've struggled for many years may see things turn around. People are eating more low-cost foods. Spaghetti, canned goods, peanut butter. Josephine Bennett reports from Georgia on the situation for peanut farmers.
It's the start of peanut season in South Georgia. Over the next few weeks, farmers here will be plowing and planting their fields. Justin Jones has been farming his whole life. He is counting on increased demand and hopes to be harvesting his crop in about 4 months.
We planted last year, if my memory serves me right, about 300 give or take acres, and we probably exactly doubled this year to 600 on the nose.
Jones' decision is partially based on the rising price of oil. His Georgia green peanuts don't need fertilizer, and the cost of that fertilizer has doubled over the last 2 years. But there's a good reason not to grow peanuts: government subsidies on corn-based biofuel. Richard Barnhill is a peanut broker in Albany, Georgia.
The farmer's got to decide, can I make more with corn or with peanuts or with cotton or with soybeans? And so the ethanol issue is affecting all farm commodities.
Still, the U.S. Department of Agriculture is predicting a 16% jump in peanut harvests this year. That's because farmers know the declining dollar will drive demand for peanuts in places like Europe and Japan. China, normally a major world supplier, has decided to hoard all of its peanuts for domestic use. The storage room at McCleskey Mills in Smithville looks like an airplane hangar. A front loader is moving a mountain of peanuts into underground storage. Most of the peanuts here will be used to make peanut butter. Barnhill says sales of the lunchbox staple are up, which is pretty typical in tough economic times like these.
It's a good source of protein. It is affordable, and we also find that one of the first things that people cut out in a tough economy is eating out.
Barnhill says peanut supplies are tight, but not critical, at least not yet. But for farmer Justin Jones, increased demand is good news.
I hope it depletes the supply and makes the price go up. Of course, that's a farmer's motto.
If peanut prices follow the lead of other commodities, Jones will be getting his wish. In Macon, Georgia, I'm Josephine Bennett for Marketplace.
The rise in food prices has pinched budgets all around the world. But in Haiti, the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, it's been especially painful. Haiti's main staple is rice. The price of rice has jumped nearly 80% since September. You probably heard about the riots in Haiti. Many people in that country blame the U.S. for their hunger pangs. Reed Lindsay reports from Port-au-Prince.
Food vendor Siliana Monase sits on a cinder block in a muddy marketplace in downtown Port-au-Prince. Siliana is selling yams in the searing heat, but there are few buyers.
I put my merchandise on the ground and I didn't sell anything all day. I can't make money to eat, to drink. I'm hungry, but I don't have anything.
Yams, manioc, millet, breadfruit, all of these used to be Haitian staples, but today they're not selling well.
Most food nowadays is from Miami. All the food we eat is imported.
At the top of this food pyramid is rice, known here as Miami rice.
Lots of Miami rice started coming into the country. Even though Haitian rice was still sold, it became too expensive. Miami rice destroyed Haitian rice.
14 years ago, at the urging of the U.S. government and International Monetary Fund, Haiti slashed its tariffs and opened its market to imports. U.S. subsidized rice poured into the Caribbean nation. Rice, once so prized it was only eaten on Sundays, suddenly became cheap enough that the average Haitian could eat it daily. Haiti became the third largest importer of U.S. grown rice, and local production of rice and traditional food nosedived.
There's no rice in the mountains. Where I came from, nobody grows rice.
That's Marie-Michelle Jean. She moved here 12 years ago from the countryside when farms began to collapse. She blames cheap imported food and a government that has done little to help the country's farmers.
Farmers aren't encouraged to grow local food. Local food is useless now.
Marie-Michelle sells rice from a sack branded with a U.S. flag. She prefers yams to rice, but says because the demand for yams is weak, she makes more money selling imported food. She's dropped her prices on rice by about 20% in the last week thanks to an emergency government subsidy. But at 50 cents a pound, it's still too pricey for most Haitians. Half the population gets by on less than a dollar a day. Vegetable vendor Siliana Monase says she'll eat whatever she can afford to buy. Lately, the situation has become so desperate, people now talk about a Clorox hunger. A hunger so painful, it feels as if they've swallowed bleach.
Any food that comes, we'll eat. We'll take anything we can get. We're not well. We have nothing. We're hungry. Hunger is killing us.
Haiti's president, René Préval, promises to cut the price of fertilizer and improve irrigation for farmers. But those who are hungry now are skeptical that they'll see a change in food prices anytime soon. In Port-au-Prince, Haiti, I'm Reed Lindsay for Marketplace.
Tomorrow on Marketplace.org, our series continues. High prices have more people planting backyard gardens. And we'll find out how food manufacturers are dealing with more expensive ingredients. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.